Meeting will come to order. I see three more members coming in, which is, doesn't give us quite a quorum, but Representative Greiling has her committee at the very same time, and so we want to try to get her back to her committee as quickly as we can. We've put her first, and we have one sheet of paper, I think, before us. So welcome to the committee, Representative Greiling. And members, I'm assuming you'll take lots of notes today and listen and ask questions to clarify, and then after the Tuesday and Thursday meeting, we'll look forward to some opportunities for small conversations about your responses and requests and so forth as it relates to this year. And we are, like everyone else, waiting for a target for our committee, as Mindy, as Representative Greiling is. So proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and happy St. Patrick's Day to you all, not just Representative Mullery. He tells me there is one more person in the House that's as Irish as he is, and so if anyone knows the answer to who the other one is, it's going to bug me now.
It would be Mahoney.
Rook
would be
no.
He said no to Mahoney.
Well, I thought everybody was on St. Patrick's.
Well, there you go. Madam Chair, members, it's probably a trick question. You're just trying to torture me, as usual. You have the sheet before you, it sounds like, and we did hear all these bills, and then all the members of our committee voted, and these are the prioritizations of all the members of our committee bipartisanly and what they put forward. We did have four members of our committee who chose not to vote. They did not think there should be a bonding bill this year, and so they chose not to help us prioritize. But all the other members, these were the clear choices. And the first one is at the State Academy in Faribault, the schools for the students who are deaf or blind, they have actually the capacity to have more students than what they actually have in their classes. But because so many of the students don't live close enough to drive back and forth, they have to stay there, and they don't have enough housing. And so their highest priority is to build more dormitories so they could serve more students. And I think that would be a very cost-efficient project. Our committee thought so, to take advantage of the buildings that are there, the staff, and all their training to help students be productive in life, but for having the housing to take in more students. Number two on the list, and this is Representative Fritz's bill, number two on the list is Red Lake, and this is Representative Saylor's bill, and our members were wanting to hear the history of what funding has been given to Red Lake over the years. And I have to say that I think many of our members, myself included, thought that it was more than it was, because this committee knows and remembers probably even better than K-12 that we have passed things that have been vetoed. They've been pared down sometimes in the bargaining, and other times they have been just totally vetoed. And so even though it seems like they're here every year, they really haven't received as much as we think. And then we also have to remember that they are a responsibility for the state, unlike any other district, because they do not have property wealth. So they have nothing to levy against to do bonds for their buildings, except for, you know, just some fragmented crumbs of properties. But by basically speaking, that we have to fund their buildings, and this is their middle school and high school, remodel the kitchen and the cafeteria. We were happy to hear that there's completions going on with the project that we gave the money before for. And we were also very interested, I think this committee would be too, that they have a new superintendent who is working very well with the Department of Education, kind of cracking the whip and making sure the money is put to good use. And we've been very impressed with how Red Lake is operating at present.
And Representative Greiling, yes, they do not qualify for federal stimulus dollars. Is that correct?
Madam Chair and members, not that I'm aware of, but I know that that has been the hope, though, from other earlier discussions we've had in our committee. So I think all of these projects, and the next two as well, are fluid for this committee to help sort out based on the federal stimulus money, because of course if we could use that, that would be even better. But we didn't have any testimony to that effect when we had this hearing. We did have information from the Department of Education earlier that that they might qualify, but we didn't have that at that hearing. Then the third choice is Representative Falkspill, and his project is also being requested, in fact, I think it is right now in the Energy Finance Committee, so that will have to be sorted out. But it's for a geothermal heating system, you know, again, this one may be the federal stimulus money in the Energy Committee. And then also there was the complication that came up in our committee, and some members did point out that this school district, Dawson Boyd, has passed a bond to build this geothermal heating system. But they were very clear in their testimony that they would rather not spend those local bonds if they could somehow qualify for bonding money or federal stimulus money. And then tied for third, you'll notice that both the Dawson Boyd project and the next one are both number three, and that's because we literally had a tie in the polling. This is also Representative Fritz's bill for the state academy for a wind generator, and you know that maybe is in the mix for other types of money as well. I do believe, in speaking with Representative Fritz, that she, like the committee, prioritizes the housing if we only did one of those two. And that, Madam Chair, is our recommendation.
Questions of Representative Greiling, just to get, if you need any clarity on the request. I think you did very well. So
thank you very much.
We're clear.
Members.
Thank you. Is Representative Paymar in the room? Is Representative Huntley in the room? Okay. We're just going to make sure that that person isn't just coming in. Otherwise, Representative Junkie will proceed with yours.
Somebody coming in.
No. Representative Junkie.
Madam Chair and members, you'll find a one-sheet recommendation in your packet after discussing with Representative Hamilton and Magnus. We decided the simplest thing to do for an off-year bonding bill was simply to forward projects that had been recommended the last cycle by the Department of Veterans Affairs, but did not make governor's recs or legislative recs. So these are all projects that have already been planned, basically are sitting on the shelf, ready to go, and you can see on the other side we have the agency request and then what's left yet unfunded from previous requests. So it's pretty straightforward. Specific projects, obviously the department's here. If you have any questions, they can certainly answer it. I will tell you I did not get the detail. I carried forward the military affairs portion too, but I have yet, they didn't provide it and I didn't ask them to yesterday. Typically, Representative Kahn has that, but they handed that off to our committee, at least the bonding portion of it, and they did not provide the detail that Veterans Affairs did as to exact locations of the armories, etc., that might have these bonding requests pending, but certainly we can get that. And I will also mention that just this morning, your staff and mine received a memo from our House staff. There are some 2009 requests in the veterans bill that we have, governor's requests for cash, that we think some of those may be bondable. Not a great share of them, but there are some that will probably be bondable. We'll put that list together and forward it to you in the next day or two so you have it. But we just didn't have time to sort through and pull those out. I just saw it this morning. So That's it, Madam Chair.
What I recall when Military Affairs is here, they have one federal stimulus project that requires a state match, and I'm assuming that would be something you...
Right, they do, and unfortunately, we're not. If there's a good and plus with the stimulus money, there was $150 million for veterans' homes in the stimulus package also, but that was for projects that were previously approved, and since we didn't approve legislatively Minneapolis, for example, Building 17 or Sandy Hook County mental health project, we weren't on the top of the list, but it means that the top of the list did clear with the stimulus money, and if we approve projects forward, hopefully it won't take quite the time to get those projects federally approved. So we just weren't ready, not knowing the federal stimulus money came. We might have done things a bit differently last year had we known that, and we probably would have got some of that money. However, Fergus Falls, we did do a facilities upgrade there. That was pending on the federal list, and that may just make that $150 million, and so we might see some stimulus money for Veterans Affairs in Fergus.
And Representative Dunkey, your list correlates well with advice that that Mr. Stinson has given. He calls them not shovel-ready projects, but paint-ready.
Yeah.
And he talks about directing capital outlays toward repair and renovation, which are more labor-intensive and can be done quicker than new buildings.
Right. And again, that's why we ported these. All these have been in the planning stages for the last few years and are certainly still there when we're requested by the department.
Any questions of Representative Dunkey? Thank you very much. Representative Tamar. We have some reports.
Madam Chair, I just offered both of these reports to the committee, the crime lab plan and also the statewide master plan for fire and law enforcement training facilities. The only bonding proposals that came to our committee, you have in your memo, House File 269, 554, and 815. The only member who requested a hearing request was Representative Dabney on a Minneapolis fire training center, and we heard his bill, and our comments are in the memo. We did not go into the request in great detail. There was some issues that were raised about the location of this fire training center in Fridley, which is near another training facility in Fridley, but Representative Dabney assured the committee that there were other elements of his proposal that were quite different in terms of needs for the city of Minneapolis, and the committee really didn't have a recommendation. I don't know if there's...
But now we do have good direction with both the statewide master plan for fire and law enforcement. Have they been very clear? Has the department been very clear in its...
I don't know if there's someone here from DPS to address the Minneapolis proposal or not. They were not at our committee, so we weren't able to ask them any of the questions that surfaced. But in terms of your own planning and decision-making, I think that the DPS studies are more than adequate to help you think through in a more methodical way where the center should be and to make sure that,
Okay, we have two questions for Representative Dean.
We're talking about the
fire training.
Yes, we're talking about the recent fire training, and I think it's important to note that this is Emergency Operations Center for Minneapolis, and perhaps I know that there's somebody from Minneapolis here that I don't know if you'd like to hear from them or not.
We'll get the other question, Representative Mallory.
Madam Chair, I basically was going to explain a little more about it, but if are we going to do that now or when we take it up?
Well,
later?
You're, if there's somebody from Minneapolis, what Representative Tamar is requesting is that we now have studies that set criteria that we're to measure projects against. I think is that what I hear.
That's correct, ma'am.
That's what I hear you suggesting. But we'll give you we're a little ahead of time, so if you would like to comment.
Chair Hausman, thank you. Pierre Ouellette with the City of Minneapolis. I'll be very brief. Just one thing I think that Representative Wagenius is going to bring up. While this is partially for our fire training facility, it's classrooms for the fire training, those classrooms will also serve as a new emergency operations center for the city. So, in fact, it isn't just for the fire training center, but it's also creating a new emergency operations center. And also along with that, the facility will also house some statewide assets, emergency assets the city currently hosts, including the collapse rescue team and the bomb squad team. So in a sense, it's a bit of a threefer in that a piece of it is, in fact, part of the training facility. The facility itself is actually state-of-the-art. It's a very great facility. However, the classrooms that support it and the support space are just abysmal. So we would build a facility that would serve as regular classrooms for the EOC, or excuse me, regular classrooms for the fire training facility, but it would also serve as an emergency operations center.
And I think what we learned the last go round is this whole issue of duplicative training facilities, and so speak to the issue of another center nearby.
Madam Chair, thank you. There is another center nearby in Fridley, although it's quite different than our facility. It has, of course, no emergency operations or strategic information center, which ours will have. It has no technical rescue or hazard material prop. All training is conducted outdoors. There are no classroom facilities there. It has limited training for fire and EMS and first responders. There is no technical rescue or hazard material props. They do have a four-story tower with a burn room, although we have that as well. The site includes a two-and-a-half-story residential training building. We have a six-story fire training tower. There are no classrooms on the facility. I think I said that. It has limited access and parking. The Fridley site has no bathrooms. I think our chief described it as the Fridley is really a training site, and ours is a training center. So they're quite different. One is quite a bit further. Ours is quite a bit further developed. It's certainly a good policy question about which facility deserves some investment. However, we feel strongly that because our center is both will help with the classrooms and the EOC, we think it's worthwhile for a state investment.
Representative. Representative
Erdahl. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Tamar. I did not request a hearing this year for the Annandale Tactical Training Center, not because my support is flagged at all for it, but I plan on emphasizing it next year in the hopefully larger bonding bill. Most of the committee here, or at least many of the members, have been to the Annandale Center and know of the they know about it, and I will help explain to those members who maybe need a little more explaining next year. And Representative Tamar, I don't think you've ever been there.
I have not.
I mean it's not that far from here. I would certainly take you to Annandale, and it's a fine town, and we could take you to the training center and give you your own first hand tour.
Madam Chair, I would love to go, and I'd like a cheeseburger when I get there.
I could arrange that. Thank you. We'll take that up more later.
I had asked a little bit more about the, and maybe it's because I rarely talk about what's going on in Minneapolis, but our emergency center was almost incapable when we had the 35W bridge collapse because it was so small. So I think it's that part of the equation that I'm most interested in. And did you say the bomb squad was going to be out there?
Yes, ma'am, and other state assets and state teams as well.
What do you mean by that?
There are, if I have it correctly, there are certain groups and teams that are statewide and respond to statewide emergencies. We host several of them, and the two that I can remember now is the bomb squad team as well as the collapse rescue team. There are volunteers from departments all over the city. However, they need to marshal and they need to collect themselves and have their equipment stored in a specific area. Currently, a lot of these teams have their stuff stored in different stations around the city. However, having these teams together and being able to marshal in a particular spot, we think is of some use. We're still happy to host these teams and their equipment, however, having them located in a little more useful spot, we think is a good idea.
And Mr. Ouellette, I will tell you that I think I know something of the content of this, but I do intend to do exactly what Representative Hamar advises me, and that is to review the attached reports and look at the guidelines and measure projects. So I don't know if you've had a chance to see them, but that might be a helpful read to not today, but if you want to shape arguments to realize that that's the context in which we're.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a list of points that I won't make now about how we believe this facility does fulfill some of the questions asked and some of the needs expressed in the report as well.
Okay, two more questions and then we'll move on. Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, I'm just trying to sort through. You referenced Minneapolis and then divided into two parts, training and emergency response center, and then you also referenced meeting some statewide needs, and I'm just trying to see how that all interacts with other communities, and maybe that's in part what Representative Hamar was referring to, but would, for example, St. Paul have access to the training components there? And when you mentioned the second site in Fridley, that's for a different clientele. I just want to kind of sort out who has the access and what the purpose is and how broad it is beyond Minneapolis and the reference state right now.
Madam Chair, Representative, St. Paul has their own training facility, which is located in the Midway area. It is quite different than ours. They certainly could use our facility. We tend to draw from Western Hennepin and those areas. I have a long list that I won't read of both suburban and other urban firefighters that train at this facility. I think there's 48, including police departments as well, who use our facility. The other facility in Fridley was built about 10, maybe 15 years ago, and was built at a time, at least from my understanding, where three of the northern suburban departments were looking to merge and to create their own, not just their own training facility, but one department. That has not happened, although it could happen in the future.
So, Madam Chair, then it sounds to me now with a little more description here that this is really a regional facility, at least relative to training.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And again, members, I'm going to reference the last two paragraphs. It looks like those are the relevant paragraphs of Representative Hamar's advice to us, which I intend to take very, very much to heart. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a question. I remember getting some information about training for firefighters or maybe for the whole fire department in the federal stimulus package or the federal jobs bill that's been coming forward. Is Minneapolis going to any of these up, are they going to take advantage of this? Is this figured into the equation? Maybe Representative Hamar has already got it in there. I don't know.
Mr. Ouellette.
I don't have an answer for that, but I certainly could check into that to see, in fact, if the city received federal stimulus for firefighter training.
I'm sorry, I was so surprised. I got a postcard at my door at home, and it didn't say Representative Karen Clark, but it talked about training for firefighters, so I thought, maybe they're mailing it to everybody in the neighborhood, because we do have, a need for more fire training and firefighter training and so on. But anyway, please check into it. It seems like it's an option. Thank you.
And Representative Hamar, one more question then. You're indicating the Department of Public Safety is currently completing a public safety training needs assessment. It's anticipated to be completed by early April. That's right around the corner. Have you seen a draft?
I have not, Madam Chair.
We'll see if we can get some advance. Mr. Willett.
Madam Chair, if I could close with one plug, I'll let folks know that originally last year this bill was in and we had asked for $8 million. Since then, we have received a sizable federal grant, and our ask has shrunk from $8 million to $3
million. And Madam Chair?
Representative
Tamar. I just want to be clear. I don't oppose this project. I was just asked if you look at the guidelines.
Exactly.
There are many things in this proposal, in the Dabney proposal for Minneapolis that do meet the requirements.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that in order to make an informed decision, you should read the entire master plan.
Okay. Oh, I think we have no more questions.
Thank you.
So we will read the master plan and take its advice seriously.
Thank you,
Representative Riccovina?
Okay.
I think Representative Huntley is not here, so we're...
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. From our division, we felt that the vetoed project from last year's bonding bill were the top priorities, and the keeper was next, and then we didn't prioritize any of the deed proposals. We had a discussion about it and thought that most, if not all of them, would probably be coming back next year again to make recommendations to you when you go on your bonding tour. So,
and
given the fact that the bill, just between the vetoed project and the HEAPER, I think it's about, 164 million dollars, which would be over half of Langseth's bill, which who knows if it's going to be that big anyway. So.
And I seem to recall that Minscu board did reaffirm its commitment to all four of those vetoed projects. Is that your understanding?
Yes, Madam Chair, and I believe the university also supports the bill, and then they proposed the what you have in your packet, the different HEAPER projects for the Minscu and the university system. And all these are ready to go right away.
And in fact, I have a shovel-ready chart from Minscu that they worked a little more aggressively on after they understood our eagerness to move quickly. And it looks as though a good bit of what you're recommending would, in fact, be ready this spring.
And I can't remember, Madam Chair, but at the Bell Museum, weren't there a couple of statues all kinds that are made of copper?
Yeah. We can melt those down and use them for, I don't know, cell phones and computers.
Any nickel in there?
No questions. So, I think we're...
Is it correct then in the Minscu that the shovel-ready projects are $50 million, is that what I see from that list?
Well, plus on top of that, all of the other vetoed projects are ready to go because all the work was done
For HEAPER.
But all the HEAPER projects are, from my understanding, they're all ready to go and they're all spelled out, as is the proposal by the university.
And well, Madam Chair, what was the total for HEAPER for the university?
35, I think.
35? Okay, thank you.
And members, we do have that construction timeline, and I thought that went to everybody, but maybe we'll just make a note to get it to everyone again, just so they can understand that Minscu has a pretty tight timeline on all that.
And Madam Chair, just there are some deep projects that were also ready to go this year that we forwarded to you, and there's a few that I think are pretty good and important to the area. There were some biofuel proposals by Representative Eakin and Dale, and one other one, Representative Mahoney, helped me out. Who was the other biofuel proposal? Maybe
there's one. There's a number.
Yeah, there were three. But again, knowing what this took up in the bonding bill, we just forwarded them on to you.
Okay. no, not, there's not one that pops out in the deed section that it's sort of a must do this year.
Well, I think Representative Carlson might have a proposal that he wants funded this year, a certain hockey arena, but. Representative Carlson, do you have any comments on that?
I'll withhold comments at this point.
You know,
it's an 11-year-old grandson that plays hockey, but he's
there were several grandpas in the legislature that lobbied me on that particular rink, I might add, and Big Lake, they've raised a lot of money, and the amount of money they're asking for from the state is well over a 2 or 3 to 1 match that they've raised locally, so, and they really do need it, and it's a kind of a local regional project. I think it's a good project, and it's a Republican project. Maybe we can help get some Republican votes.
That'd be good.
Yeah. It is.
Okay, no further questions. Representative Wagenius. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Wagenius, I should just, Representative Huntley, I believe, has 3 bills up, and so in the event that he pops in, we may just interrupt you and allow him to, so.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. What you have before you is, are 2 things from Environment and Natural Resources Finance. A list from DNR. We asked for projects that were shovel-ready, ready to go this year, and you will see that list in front of you. If you'll recall from last year, we had lists of more complicated projects in deferred maintenance. These, I would say, are the simpler ones, and we have asked DNR for a total list of deferred maintenance in all of its areas, but that's not what we wanted to bring before you. We wanted to bring before you things that were shovel ready. They say that this all can be done this summer and would employ many small contractors for multiple trades. The second thing that we have put on in the letter to you is that we think it would be important and wise to provide the match for any reinvested Minnesota flood and flooding mitigation projects where we could capture federal dollars.
And we did get from Kent Lacasmo all the projects. He's confirmed which ones have federal dollars that would require a statement.
So we did put the caveat in there that we do have some worry that we're not spending too much for flooding lands, and so we did put a caveat in there. Probably one of our most successful things last year was the wetlands, and we certainly think that it would be wise to match that.
Representative Silver.
Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius. In your first box, you have renovating buildings for energy efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
Within the federal stimulus legislation that was recently passed, there's a sizable amount of allocation for the state of Minnesota for energy efficiency for buildings. Have you had a chance to look at that to see if these can be directed towards that? Mm-hmm. And if you have, then who's doing the application for it, and are they doing it in a timely fashion?
If it would be appropriate, I'd like to ask Bob Meyer from DNR to come down, because these are all DNR projects.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. Madam Chair, members, Representative Solberg, we're in the process of working through the Department of Commerce on that exact list right now. I don't have a specific outline, but we are trying to take advantage of every and all opportunities that are available, especially in this category and others. So I can get back to you, Madam Chair, on the status of that right now, but I believe Department of Commerce is coordinating those energy efficiency dollars through their federal stimulus coordinator. So we are looking to see where we're at with that, and also this appropriation or these projects. This is just a list of what is available and ready to go. I can certainly provide information on what may qualify through any of those stimulus dollars.
I think that's important, because if these are ready to go, and that's what the criteria is for the federal stimulus as well, and there's a sizable amount, I don't think we can drop the ball on this, because some of it also needs to be done as a competitive grant in a timely fashion. I don't know exactly how this money flows, but I don't want, just because it's a competitive grant and somehow or another didn't get the grant in on time or something like that, and we lose out on that federal money.
We don't want to miss the federal dollars when they might do it.
That's right.
I just asked Assistant Commissioner Meyer if he could have a report to us by Friday on that.
That'd be very good.
We'd have it in writing. I would hope that we could share with the committee.
Representative Solberg, were you?
No, I'm done.
Representative Rickavina.
Well, Madam Chair, Mr. Meyer, I don't know if the PNR really has anything that's ever ready to go right away. I mean, some of your bonding projects from years ago are still out there. So, I mean, you're number one, and I don't know if these are prioritized, Representative Lugenius, but $10 million for energy efficiency and installing renewable energy mechanical and electrical systems. How quick do you think you can get that accomplished?
Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, these are the types of projects that require minimal design, mostly no design work. We would, upon receiving the appropriation, we would work with the Department of Administration to let a contract out with the 30 days or whatever we need to do to get some responses, some applicants, evaluate those applicants, and bid the projects. You can see below the table here, providing funding for maintenance projects like these would employ many small contractors from multiple trades throughout the state, and it would be my anticipation that within 45 days, approximately, we would have these jobs bid and ready to go. It's not the type of project where we have to do any site design, any work with a historical society about any historical research or anything like that. These are replacing windows, the roof replacements. It's creating the bid and letting the bid out for the roof and getting the bids back and evaluating them. And Madam Chair, since I do have the opportunity, I just want to provide the committee with an update on the letter that we had sent you previously, talking about some of our, what the committee asked for, ideas where we had some opportunities to increase our effectiveness in spending. We have since communicated or talked with the Department of Administration, and the first item we talked about is the contracting review. There were some instances that we had some slowdowns, but we have taken care of those issues, and they are all, they've told us that they can review our contracting issues within 1 to 2 days. At a very minimum, maximum, sometimes even faster if we need to let them do that. So I'm happy to report we've solved one of those barriers already. So just with that in mind, these are the types of projects that they would review rather quickly, post, bid, and let.
Mr. Rickavina.
Mr. Meyer, could you just give me some examples of what you're thinking about on the renewable energy, mechanical, and electrical system?
Madam Chair, members, it's going to be a different type of furnace. Many of these have very old heating and mechanical exchange system, so it's looking at the furnace system. It's going to be looking at windows, like we talked about, doors. If there is any opportunity to do other energy efficiency issues, this isn't going to be solar for the most part or anything else like that. We're looking to do that with other appropriations through other funds. It's going to be going to higher efficiency windows, insulating buildings, revamping these buildings. They are, many of them, they were designed decades ago, some of them. If you've been to the state park system, some of our other buildings, and making sure that they are using the latest technology, so to speak, to make sure that they are efficient.
Follow up? Representative Hansen.
Thank you. I'm down here, Madam Chair. Commissioner Meyer, I'm glad you mentioned or followed up from the question on speed of process, because frankly I think last week when we met there was confusion on the committee, because we're just having difficulty understanding how things don't why things don't happen. And I asked the question of, is there anything that we can do? You know, is there any statutory prohibitions or processes or barriers that we have in law that prevent things from getting done on time? And I think the committee was kind of confused by the answers we've been getting on this. And so maybe if you can elaborate on that at one point. And then the second point is, yesterday at the Heritage Council, I asked a question about acquisition, wildlife management area acquisition. So if we have $26 million here, and we have the backlog of all the other bonding projects for the past few years, and then we put additional millions of dollars on acquisition, and there's cuts to staff, how does this get done? What can get done? Because we're starting to move through big pieces here, and if what Representative Solberg was saying, if we've got pieces that are stimulus package dollars that could go through agencies, that's another piece of things. So maybe if you can elaborate on that, because it's I think a question on not just my mind but other members' minds as well.
Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, Representative Hanson, that's a lot of questions rolled into one statement, but I'll do my best to answer. First of all, I do apologize to the committee for not being here and not having the right people here to answer your questions at your last hearing when Cap Alsko was talking about pre-designed design. If you look at the balance of unallotted or unexpended bond dollars, most of them are in the acquisition area, and a lot of them in the trail acquisition area. And we spoke several meetings ago about just the time-consuming work it takes to acquire specific trail corridors that are established in law, making sure that we can work with those individual landowners on a one-on-one basis to do that. Also, in areas where we're funded at the project level, I call it, it does become a little bit of a slowdown for us. If we're funded at the programmatic level for appropriations and then list those areas or locations perhaps, it allows us a little bit more flexibility to get that work done a little bit quicker. The other things that we talked about, the reviewing of the contract, that's an issue that's off the table, that's taken care of. Some of the other things in 16B that we identified in our letter, we're working through that and trying to make sure we can spend those dollars as fast as possible. Typically, our timeline for bond appropriations and spending is we receive the dollars in July 1st or whenever those bond dollars are available. It takes us about to the next building cycle to get a lot of those projects, especially the parks and trails dollars, on the ground to get the pre-design, the design work done in that 9-month period or so, and then get the contract let and get the work done. As far as the acquisition side of things, we work on acquisitions that are all different: parks acquisition, trails acquisition, wildlife management area acquisition. We are going to be looking at how do we get to that work, how do we get that work done in the most effective way possible, and we're evaluating. We will have to probably contract with some people to get the appraisals done, to get the acquisition, the real estate transaction done in an expedited fashion, depending on the amount of dollars that we receive, because we do want to spend those dollars as fast as possible and get the money into the economy, get those jobs on the ground. And frankly, in this time of land acquisition prices, we want to be able to leverage those dollars as much as
and
possible.
And you can feel us right behind you pushing you too.
I appreciate that.
Representative Hanson.
Follow up to that. So the sheet that's in front of us is maintenance and more project related rather than acquisition. There's no, this is maintenance, this is asset preservation, et cetera. With acquisition, you'd have to be involved in looking at those properties. I think Mr. Simon yesterday told me that that if there were budget cuts in your staff, that WMA acquisition would be the number one priority. Is that correct? Or, I mean, how do you take deferred maintenance and that? I mean, how much can you do? And I guess what would be your ranking on what you work on?
Madam Chair, Representative Hanson, it's a bit of mixing apples and oranges almost here. The work that we're talking about here are the simple projects that you would do if you were looking to remodel your house or a structure. It's doors, it's windows, it's roof, it's water treatment facilities. We operate water treatment facilities at our larger parks. Road resurfacing is certainly an easy project to get those dollars on the ground with. The acquisition side of things, it is a huge priority for us as well, but that's done in the Division of Fish and Wildlife. These activities will all take place through the Management Resources Bureau, which is part of the operations side of the department. So these are done through Management Resources. The acquisition is typically done within the divisions, working with Lands and Minerals Division, our real estate specialists. So it's two different specialties, contracting, looking at bids, letting the bids on this side, the asset preservation. It's the real estate, it's the appraisal, reviewing the appraisal, certifying the appraisal, and bringing that transaction to closing on the other side of it with our work with our area managers, identifying locations, working with those landowners, and getting those priorities in queue.
Madam Chair, one final.
Yes.
So then, did I hear correctly then, if we are doing acquisition, you're going to have to contract to get that acquisition done, and if we were doing restoration work, would you also have to contract outside to get that work done as well?
Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, I'm not saying we will have to contract. I'm saying that if we need to look to contracting, we will be doing that to make sure that the work gets done.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to remind the committee of earlier discussion we had this session where we were getting a report on the progress of money being spent as was previously allocated in bonding bills. And when it came to DNR, there was one notable exception about money that really has been spent already, and that was in the whole area of flood mitigation. Most of that money, even from 2008, has already been spent. And we have another major flood, the flood that we're facing in northwest Minnesota. You may have heard about it in the news. The latest forecasts indicate that it could rival the 1997 flood, and especially if the forecasted storm materializes next week, heavy snow and precipitation. And we've got a number of projects up in northwest Minnesota that we've already funded in part and are ready to go to finish those projects. And so I just wanted to remind everyone that there is a notable exception in terms of money being out there and having been spent already and ready to spend more.
And in Representative Virginia's second paragraph, that's one of the two that she references there. Is it to that point?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Virginia.
I think it needs a little bit of clarification. The flooding money was grants to folks, and while they've done, the people who actually got the money, and the money is out the door, all that money has not been spent to complete the project. So it's an extra step in the process because it's grants to folks. Those folks have done design, pre-design work, but all the things on the ground have not been done yet. Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And they haven't been, a lot of things have been done. They haven't all been done because they didn't have adequate funding to finish them. And there are additional funding needs that are out there to be able to finish those projects.
Representative Eastland. Representative Rukavina.
Yeah, thank you again, Madam Chair. Mr. Meyer, how badly are all these projects needed on this list? You've got a number of different plans.
Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, you can see on the top here, this is just a list of maintenance needs. As we receive our asset preservation dollars, we go through and prioritize these needs depending on the amount of money we have. I can certainly give you a list. These are not in any prioritized order right now. I can certainly get a list for the committee of priorities. If that's the case, the instructions or the requests we received from the committee was to provide a list of opportunities that would be asset preservation needs that could be allocated this year.
Done this year.
So we pulled together a list. Obviously, $26 million, we would never expect to get anything near that. But this is, we wanted to give the committee and the legislature an idea of the actual capital asset preservation iceberg that the DNR is operating under and what we can actually, it's a Christmas list, so to speak, but this is what we could, these are what the needs are. If you want to talk about the
the desires or what absolutely is necessary, Madam Chair, we can certainly get that information to you as well.
Well, follow up representative.
Just one follow up. How many of these projects have you asked for in previous bonding bill?
Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, members, all of these types of projects, the road resurfacing and the trail resurfacing, are projects that we continue to ask for throughout the biennial budget and the capital budget cycle. The asset preservation dollars that we get, typically we ask for $2 to $3 million, and we receive between 1 and 2. And that covers a broad array of these issues. It's dealt with basically on a first come, first serve, first need. The worst leaky roof we would fix, the least energy efficient building, the worst water treatment facilities. I mean, we deal with issues on a priority basis, and we try to make sure that we're meeting our needs. This is a list of everything that's out there right now.
Well, Madam Chair and members, the reason I'm asking is because, you know, I'm not saying it looks like there's a lot of need here, and I'm sure they're all very necessary, but typically the DNR comes in and they get quite a chunk of money, and most of them, in the bonding bill, most of the money they ask for goes to buy new properties. And my point is, you not only have property, which you're the third largest landowner in the United States of America, but be that as it may, you not only have properties all over the state that you're not taking care of now, but you have a lot of assets that you're not taking care of. And then every year in the bonding bill, you come in and basically your priority is, let's buy more land that we can't take up care of the land and the buildings we already have. And I guess that's my point, because I'm not saying that this is probably all necessary. $26 million worth of necessary stuff, but if this were a regular bonding bill, I'll bet you there wouldn't be $2 million on this list in your priorities, and you'd have $30 million worth of, let's buy some more land.
And I will say, in probably every one of these areas we're hearing today, almost without question, we tend to underfund asset preservation. It's such an easy one to nick, and we did, I think I can safely say we underfunded their asset preservation request. Representative Wagenius, you probably recall how severely we did.
Representative Ruth Gavina, you bring up an excellent point. When we were looking at, and it was hard to get, but DNR did give it to us last year, was a list just in parts alone of deferred maintenance. Over a 10-year period, I think it was $56 million, and that was the 10-year, and then new little things that had to be done, not big things, and the total was $110 million. That was for parks alone. I have asked for the same thing for trails, and we come up with another new list. If I ask for a list of dams, which is on my list to do, and I think we have asked for that, there is a humongous need for dams. So we have not done asset preservation in a huge number of areas. And that's why one of the reasons this list is so big. But you're right. We are, and let me just give you another example. I have been asking about this, and we will certainly be getting something from Mr. Meyer shortly, that we have over $1 million, I don't know if it's $1.3 million or $1.4 million acres of wildlife management area. Very few of them have good restorations on them. And for folks who hunt, there's a huge difference between a kind of junky grassland and a real good restoration. Some people don't know the difference, but most people who do know, and the science tells us that, it strongly tells us that there are restorations that are really good for wildlife and some that don't support much wildlife. So, beyond just the asset preservation, there is a whole pile of restoration that needs to be done, and it's been put on the back burner. So I'm just making your argument for you. Follow up?
Well, Madam Chair, members, and you know, we have, I believe the LCMR
$20-some million we're spending this year, about 14, help me out, Representative Genius, $14 million was of the 26 or so was for buying properties. A lot of it was
slightly less than half, I think.
Yeah, not all of it was the DNR, and then in the bill that came out of the Outdoor Heritage Committee, I don't know, Representative Hansen, you're on there, what the amount of land is that we're buying again there, but you know, we have this whole, the issue is we have a lot of land and property that's managed by the DNR right now. They don't have the wherewithal to take care of it because they don't have the resources. So we should think about that when we're looking at these other bills that are going to be coming in front of us, the legislature this year, both the LCMR and the 3/8 of a cent. And then to add insult to injury, members, if you're from Representative Solberg or Representative Howes or my district, and the governor cuts $4.8 million of payment in lieu of tax money, which mostly goes to our areas, to give a little bit back to the schools and cities where these are located. And so that's a whole other issue, the TILT payments, which we had that discussion in LCMR.
What I'm going to try to do for this committee and for myself too is get a list of all of the things in DNR where we have deferred maintenance or that we have to replace the outhouses because they're not quite, you know, we need to work on those in the dams area, in the restoration area. What is the total backlog? Is that...
That would be good information.
And I think that perhaps every committee should do the same thing, to look at what this whole iceberg is, because we are dealing with the tip of it, and I can feel it. I don't know the size of it, but we will try to get that for you, for us too. Does that make sense? Does that work for you?
Madam Chair,
Meyer.
Members, yeah, the way that we look at it, the way that we present our bonding recommendations or have been in the past, is health and safety, conservation, recreation, and asset preservation are the four broad categories. I think we can organize some information around those categories for the committee to see. And just going back to Representative Rucas Lubina's committee, our highest priority is always at health and safety, no matter what. Representative Lanning's right on the money. Flood hazard mitigation, dam safety and repair are our two strongest priorities that we continually come in and work with the legislature to fund. We're very fortunate to have a lot of other stakeholders that want us to do the right thing in a lot of different areas, the recreation, the conservation, but it's not the DNR. It's the citizens of the state of Minnesota who we work for and we own these properties for, and it's all of us together who are responsible for working with them, and we do appreciate your support. So we would be more than happy to get that information in a timely manner. So.
Oh, I let me add to the health and safety that from now on, energy efficiency has to be one of the things that we put on the table for all of this. So,
Representative Scott, were you passing?
I'm passing. That my question was answered.
Okay. And I think Representative Erdahl wanted to go last, so I'm checking first just to make sure there are no other questions.
Oh no.
Representative, I don't know.
Representative Erdahl. Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I'm not going to talk about Greenleaf.
Talk about outhouses.
But almost, it was almost. I was going to change the subject. That's why I wanted to be last. Just real briefly, a reminder, Commissioner Meyer, that we have these metro, non-metro park bills, regional park bills coming up, and I think once before I was wondering, how many non-regional parks, non-metro regional parks are there? And, for the Heritage Committee or Cultural Outdoors or this committee, just a reminder that I would like that number of how many regional parks we have.
I think there are no more questions. Thank you.
We have just
checked. The governor's budget is out, and Representative Solberg just confirmed for us. It looks like the debt service that the governor has included is for a bonding bill of $120 million.
Well, I think so.
That just about does U of M and Minsky. Members, Representative Huntley is clearly tied up in committee, and if you would just look briefly at his recommendations, we'll provide an opportunity for him to come next time. But there might be some people in the audience who had intended to speak on this, or if you note specifically that Representative Hilty has just introduced a bill that would begin phase two of the Minnesota Sex Offender Program Treatment Facility expansion. We did hear that issue here. In the past, the division has strongly supported the expansion and would continue to rank it as a high priority. And it gives a little bit of a numbers discussion here. And I see Mr. Benson is here, and rather than, if there are questions about that, did you hear sufficient about that when the department was before us? Would you like to hear a few words of it since Representative Huntley is not here? What are the wishes of the committee? Questions about that project? Yes, Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we had some questions that maybe weren't answered with regard to the completion dates and budget. I don't know if those got back to the committee.
We'd be happy to have you come forward if you want, since Representative Huntley isn't here, rather than have you come back on Thursday, if you would perhaps want to just respond to the questions that might be here. Did you hear that Representative Dean's question?
Madam Chair and members, I'm Dennis Benson, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Sex Offender Program. I think I understand the question. Are you talking about the Phase 1 building? We are in the process of completing the first phase, which is a 400-bed facility that is scheduled to open July 1. That's a little bit behind schedule. But in addition to that, there is a phase two for this site that is pre-design is completed. It is shovel ready, and obviously there is no governor's bonding bill this year, so we are not advocating for that. On the other hand, we have pressures in this area. The governor's office is aware of our pressures in terms of our population growth. The building that I just referred to, phase one, will be two-thirds full the day that we open it. We have to move out of prison space that we're currently renting, and the building will be full by the end of 2011. So there were some funds that were available, so pre-design has been completed. In addition to a second 400-bed building in phase two, there is also plans to build some infrastructure, program space, kitchen space, a chapel or religious activity space, and some vocational work program space. So those are kind of the pieces that remain out there that will be included in the phase two of this project at some point.
Welcome. We just decided we'd go ahead with your. We're finished with all the rest of them, and we were just at least moving into what is perhaps a big direction here that you're.
Well, Madam Chair, I just had three bills up in on the second floor. All were successful, and this is just our report from the Health and Human Services Science Division on bonding recommendations. And we did last year highly recommend the MSOP proposal. It is a proposal that I believe is ready to go, at least the phase one.
Madam Chair and members, yes, this is again, as I mentioned, it's the pre-design is complete, and whether it's this year or next year, we are prepared to continue moving forward.
So I think it's a very important project. Obviously, it's a lot of money, but it would put people to work this summer, which is, I think, what this bonding bill is about. It's something that we're going to have to do eventually anyway, so why not do it now?
And of the projects that came...
The other projects were considered lower priority. Those were the two hospitals and the headstones for people at the... various regional treatment centers that died while they were in the regional treatment center. So we thought they were all, those three were good projects, the two hospitals, but the facility don't rank as high as getting this facility done, which we're going to have to do. And so we supported that one higher. The two hospitals are not state-run hospitals, and that is always an issue.
And members, I'll just speak to mine. One of them's in my hometown, but it does give you pause when you know it's not a public hospital, and you know there are many of that type of hospital around the state. And so it is in, that one is in the Senate bill, but you may recall that we had discussed in here about how other states deal with this when it's difficult to find the credit to build some of those capital projects.
Well, Madam Chair and members, this is a very interesting time for the hospital and healthcare providers in that the one at Awachang was supposed to be built by St. Mary's Duluth Clinic, and they can't borrow any money right now. And it's very difficult for hospitals at this particular time to borrow money.
Representative Mullery, I realize I wrote your name down. Did I not call on you earlier? Did you have a question?
I just had a question for Mr. Benson. Obviously, affects how much we put into that. Is do we ever have any plan on... The original plan was to send people there and then treat them and release them, but we've never released one. Are we ever going to release any or just keep piling them up?
Madam Chair and members... we have released one in the last 12 years. I would add to that, he did come back. But the good news is we have one at Community Preparation Service and a second one on the way. That's kind of the last stop. It's a housing area outside of the secure perimeter down at St. Peter. And we just received word yesterday that a third has been affirmatively recommended to the SCAP panel, Supreme Court appeal panel. So the wheels are slowly starting to turn in this program. These are very difficult patients, as we all understand, with long histories, high psychopathy scores, and are in need of prolonged treatment. So I certainly understand the concern about the lack of much activity at that back door, but I'm confident that the wheels again are slowly starting to turn. We treat them, as you know, it's courts in, courts out, so these are decisions that are made by the courts in terms of who comes in and when they're ready to be released.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to get a clarification. One of the comments that you made earlier, Mr. Benson, was regarding two-thirds of the facility would be full when the doors open. Was that for phase one only, or was that phase one and two combined?
Mr. Benson.
Madam Chair and Representative, that's just phase one. We have approximately 200 patients in rented prison bed space at the Moose Lake Prison, and we would bring those 200 over, and we may transfer one small unit up from St. Peter.
Follow-up?
No, that's
Park.
You know, when you talk about the release of those folks, it just brings to mind a problem we have with extreme over-concentration of sex offenders in some of our neighborhoods. Are you dealing with that when you're talking about the release of these people, too? Are you talking, do you keep that in mind? Two neighborhoods, I believe, Representative Mullery isn't here, but I believe his neighborhood and my neighborhood have... There he is. I'm sorry.
I just talked about two minutes
ago. I thought you left. Anyway, maybe you can help me get the number, but I know it's, you know, it's more than half. In two neighborhoods of the whole, you know...
Jordan.
Yeah. One of the neighborhoods you represent, one of the neighborhoods I represent.
Right.
have more than half of all the sex offenders released into our neighborhoods because it's an easy mark for, you know, housing, I suppose. So when we talk about these folks coming out, are you paying attention to that, and do you have some principles that operate in terms of where they might be headed?
Mr. Benson.
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, that's a good question and certainly a fair question. Coincidentally, I had lunch with our clinical director today, and we talked about that very issue. We have to start to prepare for the eventual reintegration of somebody. Again, when the courts decide that somebody is ready, and the plan at this community preparation service house is probably a 1 to 2, maybe 3 years, depending on the individual, and then we would fully start to reintegrate into the community. And I think we have to, somewhere between our agency and corrections, we really have to start to focus on housing for sex offenders. We have to develop a forward-thinking plan that takes all kinds of things into consideration, not just geography, but how they're supervised, where they're located. There are housing projects out there that have 24-hour, that are staffed 24 hours a day. We have some patients in our program that are low-functioning that are probably always going to be under 24/7 supervision. So I think we have to start to think about where will we locate these folks if the courts indeed deem them to be ready for reintegration. So I think we're going to have to, again, work with our corrections partners. They either come to, most of the people that come to us started in corrections. So they, obviously, the ones that you're speaking of now came out of the prison system. But these obviously will get a lot of attention when we finally, when the courts decide to provisionally discharge somebody. So, yes, we will certainly be paying attention to that.
Further questions of Representative Huntley? Any additional comments or advice you would like to provide?
No, Madam Speaker, but sure. It's been a long day already. I used to believe that these were just bad people. And I have been convinced in my own mind, not by people like Mr. Benson, that these people are mentally ill and they need to be in a mental ill or a hospital for the mentally ill. They are not prisoners. They are people that are assigned to a hospital. And so we need to have this building actually be a hospital. And part of what this construction does is make it look less like a prison and more like a hospital.
Thank you very much. And members, on Thursday we have the remainder of the finance chairs coming, and then I would just like the opportunity for informal conversation with members to get some feedback. We're waiting for targets like every other committee in terms of what the size of what we'll construct here. And I'm assuming that will be forthcoming soon. And then we'll have our work to do. It'll be a small amount of work this year. Representative Mahoney.
Prior to those informal conversations, it would be good for me to have a list of the a list of all the recommendations by the financial chair so that we could be more ready to assist you in your decisions.
Okay. Oh, Representative Skelton.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move the minutes from March 10th and March 12th.
Oh, I'm so glad you remembered. Representative Skelton moves the minutes of March 10th and March 12th. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. Those the minutes are approved. So we'll work on that. Any other requests for information you want other than the additional reports we'll get to today? Okay, then we'll schedule times with you. Thanks. Meeting adjourned.